Blog Talk Radio.
Everything is going to be all right. You're listening to Tippy Talk. Time now to sit back, relax, listen, and enjoy the moment. Newborn is the official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. To hear more of the music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy their wonderful sound. And now it is time to step into the Tippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality. Side that allows you to reshape your life, step into your power, and connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk, where we go from where you are to where you want to be. I'm your host, Tippy Feldstein.
Hi, Tippy. Hi, Tippy. Hi, Tippy. Hi, Tippy.
No, Lori?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I can't get out of the problem.
I can hear you now.
I figured out what the problem was. And that was a little bit choppy in the beginning, but that's okay. We still have enough time. Now I can hear you clear. Sometimes tiny little button somewhere can ruin everything.
It's weird. I called three times because I heard nothing. Yeah.
It was weird. It was very weird. But we're good now. So that's what's important.
Okay.
And we're talking about something that's also really mysterious and really weird behavior, which is the credit report. It kind of behaves really weird sometimes. You check your credit report and it seems that everything is okay. And then 3 months later, you look at it and it's like, what is going on here? Where did that come from? Weird things are happening. Demons have spilled all over it. And so it's kind of symbolic of what happens to it, Lori. So
right.
I'm really, really happy that you came here today to talk about something that there's so much misinformation about credit reports. There's so many people who call themselves experts but really don't have a clue what they're talking about.
But right. Before we go anywhere else, Lori, what is it that brought you? First of all, why don't you tell us what is a credit consultant?
Okay, a credit consultant. There are lots of different titles in credit world. So a credit consultant. I consult with clients. I actually perform as an analyst first when it comes to consumer credit reporting. I'm able to analyze, a client's credit situation, and then I work as a teacher, and I teach them and provide information to them to help them resolve as many of their credit reporting issues as possible. And if I can't help them, or, for example, they may need an attorney if there's a legal situation, then I pretty much know who to refer them to help them fix that. And that's different than lots of other services, Tippi. Like, I'll get confused with a credit counselor. And a credit counselor is someone who helps manage finances, for example. And then I'll get confused with a credit repair organization, which has a whole list of different criteria. Typically, those are companies that do the work for the client, and most of them don't do it that effectively because they want to, keep the client as long as they can, keep billing them month to month. Whereas someone like me as an educational consultant, I want them to actually learn something from this, from the situation so that they have it for the rest of their life and they know how the credit reporting system really works, and that keeps them in control of their own, credit history and credit power.
So you see how confusing it is, just as confusing as it was opening the show and not being able to hear you. So you're basically saying that there is three different types of people that deal with the credit reports, which is credit counselors and credit repair organizations, and you're being a credit consultant, which is different than the other two.
Correct. They're all different. And so, for a consumer looking, for somebody, they have to do their due diligence on what it is that they want and then make sure they have the appropriate person to be able to help them.
Yeah, and something you said that I think is really, really important for people to know, because there's so many people who claim that they can repair your credit for a certain amount of money. And let's say if they take a nice chunk up front, and they don't do their job, there's really not much you can do. But if they have you on a monthly basis, then it's in their better interest never to really repair your credit, because as soon as it is repaired, they lose a client. So you're in a lose-lose situation if you do that.
That's correct. Credit repair, you're right. Credit repair companies typically bill month to month. I'm going to say the average is about $100 a person month to month. They only dispute the majority of them with the credit bureau. So I'm going to share a little secret with you because most people don't know how credit repair organizations work. When a credit repair organization disputes on behalf of a client, of course, it's all letters are sent out in the client's name. And so they'll send out three letters a month for that $100 and try to dispute things, for example, by saying it's not theirs. What happens on the other end is that the majority of these disputes are never actually read by a human being. Most of them are optically scanned. It's kind of like what companies do with resumes nowadays. They scan for keywords. So when these are optically scanned for disputes, it's one of 22 two-digit codes. It's put into an email verification system. It's a software program. And so the credit bureaus zap out that information. Remember, not reading letters here, anybody, in most cases. And then they zap it out to the collectors and creditors. And unless something has changed or if it's past the statute of limitations for credit reporting, for example, highly unlikely that anything, if maybe a very little bit, might possibly come off the report. That's how credit repair works, and that's how they operate. Now, of course, there are some companies that are legitimate, and there are some companies that do try and teach, a little bit of consumer credit. But it's in their best interest to keep you going, as long as possible. A situation like mine, I'm actually the reverse. I charge $125 for one person and $200 for a couple because it's a lot of work on my part. I'm not just having them send out letters to the credit bureaus, which actually can help protect them under what's called the Fair Credit Reporting Act, but I actually make them work with the creditors and collectors by sending out letters requiring back specific information The reason why is that in every state, there's a statute of limitations for debt collection. The statute of limitations for credit reporting is usually 7 years, unless it's a government-type item or a bankruptcy, it could be 10 years, for example. So in looking for specific information when it comes back from the client, I can then evaluate the situation and tell them, okay, here's what that means, and here are your next option or options of what to do. So the client can actually direct me, okay, I want to try and do this or I want to try and do that. Because obviously everybody has a budget, and so if someone owes a lot of money, you have to work within their budget to make it work. So that's what I try and do as quickly as possible. Now they've learned how it works, and again, that gives them more control. Rather than, like you said at the beginning, wow, today my scores were 700 and in 3 months they were 650 and I have no idea why. People who go through my process, they're going to understand why, and that's the difference.
Well, you know, Lori, you gave us so much information that the average person that hasn't dealt with credit report is not going to have a clue what you're talking about. So let's go back a little bit.
Sure.
And tell us, first of all, what started you working on the credit report thing? Because it had to be a journey of how it caught your attention.
Yes. Actually, I was married at the time, back in 2005, when I moved from New Jersey to Florida with my husband. And we were licensed as realtors because he wanted to be a realtor, and I was going to help him. And we were put onto a team where somebody was actually helping people with bad credit, doing credit repair. And she ended up leaving, and they asked me, you know, could I step in? It was just kind of a part-time thing. And I will tell you that I cried for about 3 weeks trying to learn how to read credit reports, because every single credit report from different companies, they all have different formats. They all look different. I didn't know what any of the things meant that were on the report. It was really, truly confusing. And I will tell you, though, that I do like puzzles. And so it was a puzzle. So after I kind of slapped myself in the face and said, okay, you can do this, I read a tremendous amount on how to read the reports so that I'd understand them. And that sort of kicked off into, you know, I'm working with clients, but why won't the credit bureaus do anything? Or why won't specific companies, you know, when you send a letter, respond back? And how come this system seems to be broken and no one wants to fix it? So that sort of started the journey of helping people, was figuring out the puzzle. And I think doing that over the last 12 and a half years, I pretty much understand it. I once in a while get a situation where I may have to call someone for help, you know, like an attorney. But most of the stuff I pretty much understand at this point. But most people, they read things online or they read books. I see all kinds of stuff online that's wrong or incorrect. So you have to consider the source of the information. That's very important. And in saying that, even the credit bureaus list information. But again, credit bureaus, the consumer is not the client to the credit bureau. The collectors and the creditors are. So they may make it seem like if you do certain things, it's correct, but in actuality, some things can hurt you. And that's what what I've gained over all these years, dealing with so many people, is being able to see what the truth is. And that's my thing. I want to get to the truth of the matter and be able to assist them to help them improve it. But I'm also a reality check. You know, people sometimes think that their scores are going to go up to 800 in 30 days, and you'll see all kinds of ads making all kinds of promises. And the truth is, no one can make any promises when it comes to anything having to do with consumer credit. There's no promises. And if a company makes promises, I would tell you to run.
Yeah, they're lying. So I had a feeling that somewhere in there was a real estate license, because
yes.
The important thing that people need to understand is that if you really want to do any transaction in real estate, if you want to buy anything, you need to have a good credit report and a good FICO score, which we'll explain to you in a minute what that means. But So it makes sense a lot of people that are in real estate begin to start the process of learning how to deal with credit reports, because a lot of clients that you really want to help, you can't help them if their credit score is really low. And so that makes a lot of sense. So
right.
What you're saying is really true, how when you first looked at a credit report, nobody could read that. And I get that. But are you saying now that if I work with you, I'm going to become an expert in reading a credit report? Because I would rather not. I'd rather you just do it for me.
Well, you won't become an expert in reading a credit report. You'll understand, you know, do you remember Cliff Notes? Like in school, you would get Cliff Notes to a book, and it's kind of where I call it the icing on the cake. You get enough basics so that you understand the important parts of a credit report. But really what I'm teaching is how to deal with the issues that they have. And then second to that is if they have what's called a thin file, meaning not enough positive credit, how to go about developing that. And it's very important to deal with negative issues first, because if you're going to negotiate with a debt collector, you don't want to open up secured credit cards because now they think you have money. So you have to work things in a very specific order. And that is what I teach clients, how to resolve their issues whenever possible on a best efforts basis, and, you know, how to develop positive credit moving forward. And I think if they understand even just the basics of that, they have a much better chance of, over time, getting over 780 in FICO scores, which is considered platinum. If you're at 780 or higher, you know, that's the best you can be. You're going to get the lowest interest rates.
Oh, okay. I think the best I ever got was 720. I'm not an A student.
Oh, that's still pretty good.
I was pretty good, yeah. I was able to buy a house with that, but it was hard to get 720. It's not as easy as it looks, but if you do the right thing, if you know what you're doing, rather than go out and spend a bunch of money on people that promise you to do things that they probably will never do, that's also a different story. So it's all about also what you're going to do.
You're exactly right. And I get a lot of clients from some of the people that have worked with some of the bigger companies. You know, and some of the letters I've seen from these companies, I just go, what are they thinking? They're not at requesting, you know, appropriate information that the client should be getting back. So when I see some of what these people do, and in a sense, I do compete with credit repair companies, even though I teach it and do it differently. So, you know, when a company promises, remember I said run, I have actually helped clients get their money back from some of these companies, but it's very difficult, especially if the company is not in the state where they're located. And so, you know, just a little tip, if you're doing business with any company, credit repair, credit education, whatever it is, do your due diligence, you know, go online, see if there are ratings for the company, or Google the name of the company with the word fraud, scam, or complaint next to it. These are things I do when I check out a company, and see what pops up. You know, if they have thousands of complaints or even hundreds of complaints, that's telling you something right there. If they have little to no complaints, that's also telling you something right there. So you do have to be cautious, you know, with companies and who you choose.
Yeah, thank you for the tip, because it does make a difference. I think being due diligence in any part of life is really important. I just kind of didn't do due diligence on someone, and it ended up being a nightmare. So these days, it's really not that hard to look it up online.
Right.
And if you're not doing your due diligence and you're paying money, pretty much you're gambling with it. You don't know. You don't know what's going
exactly.
to happen. Absolutely. So to those of us who have no idea what you're talking about, can you explain what a FICO score is?
Sure. Well, FICO is Fair Isaac and Company, which I believe developed or went into business around the 1970s. And FICO developed a secret mathematical model or algorithm that supposedly will predict the risk factor of someone who wants to get a loan, you know, like a mortgage. So they keep it secret on purpose. And there, or the other thing, too, because when you look at scores, there are other types of scores besides FICO, but most companies use FICO. And so there are different FICO scores. There's not just one set. People think there's just one set. There are FICO scores for mortgage, for auto, for insurance, So there are different industries and different algorithms for each of those FICO scores. Now, when you purchase a FICO score from the bureaus directly, that's called a consumer FICO score, and that really means nothing. It's going to give you an approximation of where you are. But FICO scores are industry-specific. And, again, it's assessing your risk value. So, for example, if someone has low scores, chances are they're not going to qualify for a mortgage because they're high risk. Whereas if someone has high scores, they're probably going to qualify for a mortgage at a very low interest rate. So most people don't own, you know, interest rates is a whole other thing, Tippi. I mean, if you don't understand amortization and the difference in what you're going to pay, for example, on a $100,000 house, where, you know, let's say I'm going to pay 4% on the $100,000 house, but you're going to pay 6%. Well, over 30 years, that could be $100,000, $200,000, whatever it is on that house.
That's right.
So the person with the bad credit is working three jobs, you know, can't figure out how it works, can't get themselves out of debt, whereas someone with the high FICO scores is low risk to the bank, doesn't have to work three jobs, you know, and is going to pay a heck of a lot less money for anything they buy on credit or on a loan.
Okay, so that explains it, I think, mostly. It's about when you want to get a loan, and there's all kinds of different kind of loans. But if I go to get a car or if I go to get a house or whatever, don't they still use the same credit company to get the report, or they just have different criteria that they're looking for?
Well, as far as the different type of FICOs, the algorithms are different because, yes, they're looking for different criteria. But again, the scores are going to be different for each industry. And, you know, for a mortgage, you know, they use what's called a mid-score. The highest number and the lowest number are dropped, and the one in the middle is the mid-score. Another example, if you go to buy a car at a dealer, they will, most of them use Equifax, for example, to pull your credit. They may not use one of, you know, TransUnion or Experian. So it's up to individual creditors to decide, you know, what they're using, if they're just using one as opposed to all three as in a mortgage. But I do want to mention something very important that you made me think of when we talk about FICO. You know, my number one question when someone calls me up is, well, you know, I pulled my scores on Credit Karma and they were 700, but my mortgage person pulled them and they're 650. Yeah, why? It's my number one question. Well, because Credit Karma was, I believe, was actually created by the credit bureaus, but they don't use FICO scores. They use a different scoring model called Vantage, nothing to do with FICO. And it's in the very fine print of their website. So that's why there can be as much as a 50, sometimes more, sometimes less, but I'd say an average of 50 points difference from FICO to Credit Karma. Credit Karma, what they're trying to do is get you to open, balance transfer, or close credit cards, and all of those things can affect your credit your credit report negatively. Plus, those companies get paid every time you click on this, or if you apply for this. It's a hard hit inquiry of a few points, but they're getting paid. So it's like an advertising site that gives you scores you think are real, FICO scores, when they're not, and they do not show Experian at all.
So the bottom line is, if you want to buy a house, don't go to Credit Karma. They're not going to be helpful. Then actually they can be hurtful if you follow their lead. That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah, they can. What someone can do, if they're applying, if they want to not get a hard hit is when a lender pulls your credit, you've given them permission, you know, you've given them your Social Security. A hard hit is like probably 2 to 5 points, best guesstimate. But if you want to see your own FICO scores in the different categories, I believe it's about $60, and FICO sells it through their website, myfico.com, and you can pull your own credit reports with the real scores through the FICO company at MyFICO. So if I'm going out to buy a car and I want to see what my Equifax FICO score is, you know, I might buy the whole thing. But if I'm going for a mortgage, you know, I'm going to want to see everything that's on that report, all three scores, as opposed to, you know, just the one score for the car. It's a lot. It can be overwhelming.
So that's why you're here. So you're talking
yeah.
about three reports. You keep saying three reports, three agencies. There's actually three separate reporting agencies. What are they?
They are Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. Those are the big three.
And they're the ones that I used for the mortgage evaluation. Okay,
well,
Equifax, wait a minute, Equifax, TransUnion, and?
Experian.
And Experian, got it.
Right.
Okay, got it. So that's
and when you go to a mortgage company, that mortgage, each mortgage company uses a third-party service which provides the report. There are different companies that they get their reports from. They're still using FICO, but there's a third-party company that provides the report. That's why from mortgage person or mortgage company to mortgage company, the reports might not look exactly the same format-wise.
That's really important to know because, like I said, you look at your credit report on Monday with one company, and then on Tuesday you look
yes.
at a different company, and you're like, what kind of genie came and messed with my report? And that's because
yeah, exactly.
it's a different
exactly.
store.
It's, mm-hmm. Right. It's hard to read different ones. And, you know, the funny part is you can get once a year or three times a year if you're an ID theft victim, your credit reports, not scores, your reports for free from the credit bureaus through annualcreditreporting.com. But let me tell you, it is they are very hard to read, those reports, and they have very limited information that most people have no clue what it is. You know, so there are credit monitoring services that you can use, and if you don't care that the scores are not going to be real FICOs, but you just want to monitor, say you're, you know, an identity theft victim, or you know there are going to be changes, or you're going to open credit, and you want to be alerted to different things. There are plenty of monitoring services you can use, but again, it's not going to be the real FICO scores unless you get it from MyFICO. So everybody has a different report. Everyone has a different format, and it can make it very difficult for just a regular person to read. Like I said, I literally cried for 3 weeks and went, how can anybody, you know, read all these different reports? Even though they basically say the same thing, it's just, it can be all over the place.
Wow, you are a wealth of information. Where were you when I needed to buy a house? I will. It's really nice to be able to have someone when you're in the process of dealing with your credit report to be able to have someone and say, hey, what's going on here? Can you take a look at that? Can you explain this to me? I think it's almost like having a personal mentor. So anybody that wants to buy a house should have you on their side so that they can actually do a consultation, interpretation,
right.
and reading. Besides everything else that you do, it's like a personal coach. It's a luxury. You know,
exactly.
Like a therapist. It's a luxury.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
so
It is, and I'll
yeah.
share a quick story with you because, you know, I host a radio show, and how I got started hosting radio shows a few years back was because so many people, clients would call me, family, friends would call me, help, how do I do this, how do I do that? You know, a lot of consumer advocacy type stuff. And so I had originally hosted a radio show with a realtor friend, and when he stopped after a year, the people at the radio station said, why don't you do consumer advocacy? That's what you've been talking about. And so you know why I did it? I did it because I did about 75 episodes, weekly episodes, because now if someone calls me up, a client, a family friend, and says, how do I go buy a car without destroying my credit? And like, what are the tips for buying a car, like, from the inside? Well, I would get guests in each of these industries or each of these topics, and we would do an educational show. And at the end, the guests could give out their, you know, their contact information. So, you know, just recently someone reached out to me on LinkedIn and said, you know, the car one, how do I buy a car without screwing up my credit? I said, wait, I did a radio show on that. Let me send you the podcast. Hit the button. There it goes.
Right.
And he listened to the whole thing and thanked me. But what it did is it saved me a lot of time where I'm not getting paid to try and be nice and help people. this way I already have it all packaged up in a podcast and I can help people that way too.
Right. It's a great way because after they listen to it, they'll have more educated kind of questions, and then you can actually
right.
go somewhere rather than spend hours educating them on a lot of things that they should really know before they come to you. And most people really don't have a clue. I think even people that have been through transactions of buying, they still really are confused about everything. Yeah, they can buy,
yeah,
but they're still confused.
It is,
yeah.
And you know, though, if you have a good realtor, you know, if you have a good realtor, they will sit down and explain the process.
I know, because I am
I know. You got to explain the process to them from beginning to end, especially if they're a first-time buyer.
Mm.
They don't necessarily know the order in which things, you know, move forward. And so, you know, you pre-qualify them to make sure that, you know, they have decent credit so that they can move forward. Otherwise, you're going to spend time showing someone who's not qualified, and you don't really want to do that. But I think the biggest mistake people make when they're thinking about buying a home is they wait until it's too late, until they're too close to the time they want to buy. And then, surprise, they pull up their credit report, and, oh, now there's collections or there's problems. And, you know, they expect that someone's going to solve those problems in days or in a month, when typically it takes a long time to get that bad or to have those problems. And it's, you know, I'm not going to say there are no miracles, because I've had some, but you need to look at your credit way before, as soon as you're even thinking you might want to purchase a house. That's the time to either go to MyFICO and pull it, or go to a mortgage person and pull it and find out where you're really at. That's your first thing, because that's what you
I really
need
believe,
to get started.
Yeah, I really believe that now is the time to come to you and to start working on it, not when you decide to buy a house, not
right.
even a year before. It's now, because once you have that part settled where you understand it and you're working on it, it's anyway a work in process for the rest of your life. You do it now, so that way when you do get to a point where you are ready to buy a house, you already know how to deal with that. Because for me personally, as a real estate agent, I don't take buyers before I qualify them. And it's not just
right.
the credit score. I want to make sure they have a good credit score. I want to make sure they have the income-to-debt ratio. People come and think, oh,
right.
no, I make so much money, I can afford a house. Not necessarily. It's not necessarily true. You may make a lot of money and have a great credit score, and you will not qualify. Whatever you think
right.
a lot of money. So now is the time to prepare yourself, to get educated. And if you want to buy a house in 10 years from now because you're 20 years old, that's fine. In 10 years when you want to buy a house, you'll be able to because you're ready for it. So it's a very big investment. It's not something you do overnight, and it's not something that is, let me just make a phone call or go buy a car. It's a big investment, and it's an investment that's probably going to stay with you for 15 to 30 years. Start now. Start as soon as you graduate
right.
college. I think that should be part of the requirement of graduating college, getting to a program to fix your financial market look.
Yeah. Well, you know, you laugh, and in a way it's funny, and in a way it's not. I will tell you, when I have given speeches in the past at real estate brokerage houses or to mortgage people or at the library, people always come up to me and say, hey, you should be teaching this in school. And yet I approached, you know, the high schools, the night schools, the colleges, and not one response back. The truth is that it should be at least in high school, you know, so that teenagers have some reality concept of money, because usually they're still living with their parents, of course, and they don't even understand the concept of, forget about mortgage, you know, just of having, you know, income and expenses and paying them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody mm-hmm. were to teach that kind of stuff along with credit and other things, I think
mm-hmm.
young people would be better prepared. But again, a lot of people, you know, it seems to me like they want the magic wand to wave, and bingo, bango, they've got those scores. And, you know, one of the things, and you're going to laugh, but one of the things I talk about in the speeches that I've given is that it's because I am a reality check, it's not going to be a miracle. I actually, for entertainment value, read Craigslist credit repair ads. Because to me, they're funny.
I love it.
Like, I laugh when I see them because I know it's a scam. And people don't realize that. And there are illegal ways to do things and turn your credit to good, but they're illegal and could be considered a felony. And those are things you don't want to do. But those are things that some companies will do, and you could be dragged along for a bad ride.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You really do need to know your way around. And you need, once you talk to enough people, you start getting a feel for where you're really headed. It's just a matter of putting some attention to it. So you're absolutely right. So is it true that the credit bureaus, all three of them, have to give you legally one credit report per year for free?
Yes, they have to give you the credit report once a year for free. But they don't have to give you the scores. You can just buy those. And remember, those are the consumer FICO scores, which are kind of like an average of your other scores. But that's the annual credit report, annualcreditreport.com. But it's very difficult to read. That's the problem. You'd be better off with a credit monitoring service. Just realize they're probably not real FICOs, like I mentioned. But they will show you, the good ones will show you the three credit bureaus side by side, on the top with the accounts on the left, and you can just kind of scroll through. Some companies only report to one or two, not necessarily all three bureaus. But I will tell you, one of the first things I do that I think a lot of people don't do, when you look at your credit report, go to the personal information section first, because you want to see, is it all your name? Are there variations of your name? Are you a junior, senior? Is there somebody else's name completely on that report? Are there addresses you didn't live at or places you didn't work? That's a cue to me that that file may be merged with somebody else. And that's actually a pretty frequent thing, because when you go to a lender and you give your Social Security number and your name and your address, the databases of the bureaus actually pull similar information. So just a real quick example for you, Tippi. I had a fellow with a common name, common last name, and he lived in an apartment, and next door lived to a guy with the same last name, not related, and their credit reports had each information on them. Because the credit bureaus, their programs kind of assume that if it's at that one address over, it's got to be the same
address.
Person.
Right.
So let's just put it on that report. And so, after you look at the personal information for clues as to whether something's wrong or not, then you have to look through the accounts and make sure that you actually had all those accounts. Where it becomes more complicated for most consumers are the dates that set the statute of limitations. On a credit report, there's something called the date of last activity. Now, that could be a payment. It could be something else. But when it comes to, for example, I'm in Florida. So the statute of limitations for debt collection is 5 years from when you initially defaulted with the original creditor. Unless you made a subsequent payment and defaulted again, then that becomes the new date here in Florida for the five-year time frame. But what people have to look out for is when you default with a creditor, eventually it gets sold or assigned to a collection agency, a lot of them re-age the debt to the date they bought it, not to when it initially defaulted. So it could stay on your report, say, another 2 years. And as each collection agency is not able to collect, they have to zero it out, but they can leave it on your report, and each one can stay there, and they sell it off, for less and less money. And a lot of these companies just keep re-aging the debt forward in time, and we refer to that as zombie debt. So, I had a friend who called recently who said, hey, I just got a letter. It wasn't on the report. I just got a letter trying to collect on an 18-year-old debt. Now, 18-year-old debt is past the 7 years where they're allowed to report that type of debt. If this friend had paid on that 18-year-old debt, it would have slammed. They would have reported that to the bureaus, and it would have slammed him because here's the thing. If you pay a collection without negotiating it for deletion, which is a whole skill set in itself, it's not just a simple phone call in most cases. If you just pay off collections, you think, hey, I'm going to get higher scores because the debt's zeroed out. But what you don't know is that in the FICO scoring model, it moves the old date when you defaulted current to today when you paid it, and it can slam your score, I'm going to say, from 30 to 100 points. And so when people don't listen, or if they, you know, it's too late. Sometimes I get people who are referred, and yeah, they've just paid off 10 collectors, and I have to be the one to tell them, you've just destroyed your own credit, and I don't know, you know, there might be a way to help you, but in reality, none of those companies are obligated to do anything because you made a contract when you paid them. So I don't tell people, don't pay. But when they work with me again, we're looking for specific information to use as leverage, and then I teach them how to try to get it negotiated off the report. So the persistent people are the ones who typically get it done, and, you know, the type A personalities. And then the people, you know, who kind of whine and cry and say, oh, I made one phone call. Call again. Call on a weekend. Call at night when there's a part-timer. Send a letter to the president of the company. If you're tenacious, usually you win. If you know, are going to say, I don't want to do this. A lot of people say, hey, I don't want to do this. It's too hard. I don't want to know anything about credit. Well, then you're going to go through life spending thousands to hundreds of thousands of dollars that you could have had in your pocket, excuse me, for a vacation or buying another house or doing something fun. You know, that's kind of the difference is knowledge is power.
Yeah, I love that when people say that to me. I don't want to deal with this credit thing, crap, or I don't want to talk about politics, or I don't want to talk about that.
Right.
As if you don't talk about it and you bury your head in the sand, it's just going to go away and it's not going to affect your life. It's not going to go away. It is going to affect your life. Take responsibility
right.
for your life. Nobody else is going to do that for you. And
exactly.
the truth is, Lori, sooner or later, they're going to have to do it anyway, whether they like to or not.
Right.
So,
and, you know, an interesting statistic, there are a lot of studies, Tippy, that say, you know, anywhere from 20 to 90% of credit reports have inaccuracies. Doing this for a long time, I'm going to say it's somewhere in the middle of that. It's probably around 60 to 70% have inaccuracies that can negatively impact your credit, meaning you're paying higher interest rates and you don't even know it because you don't want to know anything about it.
I have to tell you, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know what, Lori? Last time I pulled my credit report, I had 25 names on it. 20, and that's not like unusual. They stuck a C as my middle initial. My first name was spelled two different or five different ways. I had my married name, my maiden name. It was just crazy, all those names. I don't even know where they got it from. And that's one thing that people may not even ever look at. So that's a great tip. When you look at a credit score, you could look at your name. You could understand that that in itself is already a little bit of a help for you. So that's very
right.
simple thing. Anybody can do that.
And
right?
in your case, you know, it might be a typo, a misspelling on the part of the creditor. However, you know, I often tell people, and I don't know if your name is a common name or not, but if people have a name that I see
not.
As common, sometimes I just, yeah. So I'll just Google their name and I see like how many people popped up. So if I'm in Florida and I see there are 20 people in Florida with the same name and maybe some of them are close to my client, you know, and my client's saying, hey, that's not my account. It's not my, well, it's telling me possibly that is a merged file. You can't assume. That's why we
right.
have clients. I have clients send out letters. But the personal information is, yeah, the first step to seeing and understanding, is it you that they're actually reporting about? That's the easiest part.
Yeah, but at least it's a start. It's a start to get you from being afraid to look at your credit report to actually
yeah.
looking at it and reading your name. It's a door opener for sure. Yeah. So are you still a real estate agent in Florida or in New Jersey?
No. I was licensed just for a few months. I ended up giving up my license just to do the credit part of it, you know, because back in 2005, 2006, 7, 8, you know what happened. Everything crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And Florida was one of the hardest hit. So for a long time for me, business was very slow because people had no money. They've lost everything, you know, so, so credit business for me kind of goes by what the market is. So while I would expect to be really busy now, I'm not, because a lot of lenders have, again, relaxed the mortgage requirements more so than it used to be a few years ago. So you got to watch if you're thinking about buying a house, because you know the debt-to-income ratio is important. I think a lot of people also, you know, they think, oh, I had a friend who said, I'm pre-qualified for a $200,000 house. And this is probably back in 2006, I'm going to say, before the market had crashed. I qualified for a $200,000 house. And I said, listen, I know what you make. I said, and I've seen your credit report, and you need to, and I'm not a finance person. You know, I don't really give financial advice, but you need to figure out what is your income? What are your expenses now as far as, you know, food, entertainment, things like that? And then, you know, you can contact the utility companies on that property you want to buy and find out what are the average monthly expenses. And when she did that, she said, you're right. I can only afford, you know, a $100,000 house. I can't afford a $200,000 house. So I tend to lean more towards the conservative end of things. People need to know where they stand financially in order to even move forward with their credit and ultimately to buy a house. It's a very big process.
Yeah, exactly. But you have given us today a wealth of information. There's some things that you have even said, and people may overlook it, that are so huge. Like, for example, paying off an 18-year-old debt may actually hurt you without negotiation for a deletion. Now, that may sound like common sense, but it's not. And if you know nothing about it, you're really going to hurt yourself more than to help yourself. Because, you know, the instinct will tell you that you pay off a debt, it's a good thing. Well, it's not necessarily a good thing, and it's not necessarily something that you want to do right now. You want to pay it off, great. Buy a house first and then go pay it, if that's the way you have to do it. But if you're going to, right? But if you're going to do it, negotiate it. And honestly, it even goes further than that, Lori, because I did pay off a debt before I went to buy a house. And I did negotiate for them to give me a letter saying that I owe them nothing more. But I didn't realize that it was only if I buy a house, this agreement was void. So when I went into escrow to buy a house, I had to go back and pay them the difference that we negotiated, because they somehow snuck that into our agreement. So it's not just about negotiating an agreement. It's also knowing what you're negotiating and reading the fine print, because I didn't. And it cost me money. Like you said, it's money. It's a lot of money.
Exactly. There's so many fine intricacies between credit, finance, buying a house, you know, and so I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm also a musician. And why do I say that? Well, in order to read music, it's a process. You have to learn a lot of things to read music and make sense of a lot of dots on a page with musical instruction in Italian to make it all work and come out as a piece of music. Well, credit is the exact same thing. So now, 12 and a half years later, when I look at a report, I can kind of just scan through it. And it already gives me an idea of the things that are wrong. It basically tells me a story, you know, and my goal at that point is to help that client get it back as best as possible. So, you know, it's a little scary when they work with credit repair companies and credit repair companies say, hey, we get rid of these debts and we get rid of those debts. Well, let me explain something on that that's really important. Just because a debt disappears off your report does not mean that you are not liable for that debt if it's in the statute of limitations for your state for collection. So, you know, if you have a letter of deletion, that's one thing. But even if you dispute with the credit bureaus and say it disappears, well, I hate to tell you know when it reappears? Right before you're closing on a house. 5 days before you're closing on a house, it will reappear.
Exactly.
Because that's when I get emergency phone calls. Oh, my God, it's on my report. Now I can't close. What do I do? Well, that's why it's complicated. I try to simplify it as much as possible. You know, when I'm working with a client, we go step by step. It's not all like in, you know, an hour show. It's you know, it takes a few weeks, a couple few months even for them to kind of get the hang of, okay. So the other thing I wanted to point out real quickly is if you make a late payment on something, it can be easily a 30 to 100 point hit off your credit. That is huge. Now, FICO revealed a few years ago, if you make a late mortgage payment, it is a 1 to 200 point hit. The higher your scores, the bigger the hit. So people should be scared when I say that. When you're late, they don't care, the creditors, if you didn't get it in the mail. You should know when things are due. And one way to avoid that, if you're not good at that, is to try and make a payment every other week. You know, you want to pay your credit cards off, really, but make a payment every other week at minimum, and you'll never have a 30-day late payment, ever.
Right. True. That's true. You know, Lori, we're running out of time, and I feel like we still have so much to talk about, but there is one thing that I really want to mention here, and we're talking about the importance of looking at FICO, and it wouldn't be complete with at least mentioning the fact of identity theft and identity protection.
Yes.
And if you don't want to monitor your credit report for any reason, if you decide that you're never going to buy a house, you're never going to buy a car, you're never going to buy anything, you don't care about your credit report, well, your identity can be stolen and you wouldn't even know it. So monitoring your credit report just to protect your identity, that in itself, I think, is valuable enough. So what do you think of those identity protection agencies? Do you think they're a good investment?
Well, I think for people who don't like to do anything, you know, LifeLock, for example, is one of those companies. They do send out a lot of alerts. That's good. I will tell you, Tippi, I am an identity theft victim. As of 2010, someone got my purse, long story. But all my information, you know, my credit cards change a couple times a year. What you typically have to do if you're an identity theft victim is file an ID theft affidavit, which is available on the Federal Trade Commission's website. Then, in my case, I also have security freezes, because if you're an ID theft victim, it shouldn't cost you anything to do the security freezes, you know, especially I believe it was Equifax that was breached not too long ago. I think that security freezes should be mandatory, that everyone should have them with a PIN number, as opposed to only having them when something happens, because then it's a little bit late, you know, it's like putting up a stop sign.
A little bit
accident.
Too late.
Yeah, it's a little bit too late. So identity theft is a huge topic. We could do a whole show on that. But, you know, that's why people need to actually check their credit reports more than once a year. And the monitoring services, even if they're not real FICOs, they're still going to give you alerts. You still see things change. The other thing you need to do, which is not credit related, but it works in conjunction with credit, is you got to check your bank accounts frequently. So someone like me who's an identity theft victim and has had problems going back now 8 years, I don't keep all of my money in one bank. We actually know someone in the group that we're in. I know somebody who got hit over the weekend for $600 through her.
Oh, my God.
Someone had her information, and withdrew $600 in another state. She was able to actually catch it because it was a Best Buy purchase, and, you know, she'll get her money back. But if you are a victim of identity theft and they've gotten into your bank accounts, don't change the password. You need to get all new bank accounts. You've got to be alert to what's going on with your money or you lose.
Yeah, a lot of money. And it, really, you can lose your life. You definitely lose your life. So you got a lot of tips today from Lori. You gave us way more than I even imagined that you would. Thank you so much. I'm really dedicated for people to live a better life. I cannot even imagine the kind of hell you go through when you have your identity stolen. It's the most infuriating thing. Injustice infuriates me in any level to anyone. And this is the ultimate injustice for somebody to come in and have the nerve and the audacity to steal your ID. But even worse than that, you don't have a lot of cooperation from a lot of different people. And so with that, closing with that, I really want to reiterate, get in touch with your credit report. Become good friends with it, because otherwise it could be a big deal. Thank you, Lori. We are running out of time. I really appreciate all the information. And maybe we will have you back here. But really quickly, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, where do they go?
They can go to my website, which is crediteducationconsultants.com. Or they can reach me at 813-500-6064. And thanks, Tippi, so much for having me on your show. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's really been a lot of fun for me, but also it's been very informative for anybody that's breathing in the United States. But thank you once again for coming, Lori. And
thank
we've come to the end of our time together here on Tippy Talk. Lori Zook, thank you so much for all that information. We're looking forward to seeing you again soon, I hope.
Good.
It has been a great pleasure.
Thank you, Tippy.
Yes,
all right.
I'm sorry.
Bye-bye now.
It's been a great pleasure speaking with you.
You too.
Don't forget, thank you. Thank you so much. And don't forget, we want your story. We're here to listen to your story and to share your gift. It can be any story. It doesn't have to be super inspirational or special, because here at Tippy Talk, that story is special and we want to hear it. You've been listening to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein talking with Lori Zook today on Tippy Talk Show. Thank you and have a wonderful evening, afternoon, morning, wherever you are and however you're listening to it.